on The Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
As we near the Independence Day celebration, we always like to do something special on WTBF. And this year, there was a particular book. The closer we got to the 4th of July, the more I began to realize I really need to talk to Stephen Rabb about his book. Now, the book is The Founder's Speech to a Nation in Crisis, What the Founders Would Say to America Today. You can find out more about it on their website at thefounderspeech.com. Stephen Rabb, the author and publisher, is here to talk to us. And Stephen, this is quite an unusual book in that this is not so much something that you wrote, but you are, in a sense, the editor and publisher of it in the broadest sense, because you put together compilations of dozens of founding fathers between the Revolutionary War period through the Civil War period to get insight as to the problems that are facing us in America today.
Well, that's exactly right, Dave. I mean, really, it is not my words. It is their words. So many of our arguments are uninformed because we do not know what the Founding Fathers actually said about what their intent was for this nation on liberty, on free speech, on the issues of property. What, you know, what do they believe? What do they say about the right to keep and bear arms, about faith and being a faithful people? And so I, in my mind, we needed to hear from the Founding Fathers. And so I decided to create this in the form of a speech to America from the Founding Fathers in their own words. And that's really one chapter after another is what the founder said, but in a narrative form. So it actually feels like you are back there sitting in the pew of a church, listening to a founding father standing at the front, talking with you as he would a friend about this nation, about why they formed this country, why they did the things that they did, and what they believe in. I think that's the best way for patriotic Americans to think about it, to win debates, to be able to stand up and defend our founding, is in the words of the Founding Fathers.
I will say that I teach full-time at a university in journalism, and so we talk about politics because journalists are always covering politics in America. Mm-hmm. And I am really disappointed and how few of them really understand civics at all. They don't seem to understand the system of government. Everybody seems to think that if the president proclaims that he's going to pass a law, that he's the one that's doing the work, and they forget the fact that he can propose, but it's the Congress that makes the decision, and the Supreme Court seems to think it can make law now, too, and has done so a couple of times in the last half a century that's made very bad law. I really think the reason that people can get away with these things is because the population is willfully ignorant or just poorly educated. And in either case, I think a book like this plays an invaluable role. One of the things that was mentioned, publicity stuff that was sent to me originally back in February, is that the 1619 Project claims that the revolution was all about slavery and that the British were right and we were wrong. And that just flies in the face of everything that we've ever learned about the American Revolution. But you don't stop, even at the Revolutionary era. You carry this through to the Civil War, which in a lot of ways is the culmination of the divisions and the problems that were addressed up to a certain point in the Constitution. The Civil War, one might say, was necessary in a tragic way to completely fulfill the ideals that the Constitution set down.
That's it. The founding of our country was a process. They set out ideals that were such a pivot in the way we viewed humanity, in the way that all men are created equal. It was such a pivot in the thinking, it couldn't even be actuated in that moment in time, in that one era. It took 70, 80, and 90 years for that to be fulfilled, and tragically and painfully so, in the Civil War, and you see it in the beginnings of the ideas in the Constitution, no property in men. These are human beings, and that we are equal in our thinking. It was just years after the Declaration of Independence, in which states began the process of making illegal slavery in the northern states, not in the southern states, but in the northern states, and that was because of this awakening that was happening in America. The founders were part of making that happen, and really putting that into the form of a constitution, that was actually a part of what ended slavery was the Constitution, because nowhere in the Constitution did it validate the idea that there is property in men. And that was the game-changing part that started the process, that began the process of ending slavery. We lose all that with very simplistic narratives like the 1619 Project, which create a very blunt force view of America. And so when you see it in context, when you see it not through the eyes of presentism, in which we're applying every bit of today's morality on history, but rather in the context that they lived in, you gain admiration for what they did, how they moved forward in terms of creating freedom and liberty for all.
Was this something that you had been thinking about for some time, or was this really specifically sparked off by the growing misunderstanding by Americans of what our rights under the Constitution really amount to?
It really was. I mean, the frustration I had is the frustration that many patriotic Americans have when you watch the news and watch TV and you see our nation just forgetting who we are as Americans. And so I shared that. And when Nicole Hannah Jones and 1619 Project published, there's no doubt that I started actively thinking of counteracting that with truth and with the words of the founding fathers. And it didn't necessarily come to me right away that this was needed to be a speech from them. Initially, it was going to be kind of a speech that I would almost give in my voice about the founding fathers. But the more I got into it and started pulling their brilliant words together, I realized that my voice wasn't necessary. That they said it, they said it beautifully, they said it powerfully, and if we just can present that in a way that is digestible. So often, in history, we end up with compendiums of the letters of the founding fathers. Well, if you're trying to read all the letters of Adams and Jefferson back and forth to each other, which is great to do if you have that level of interest and commitment to it. But most people want it to be kind of brought to a summarized in what's the most powerful parts of that, what's the most relevant to our world today, what are the principles and ideals that we can pull from those that are meaningful to us right now. And that's what this does, is it takes the best of their words, the most relevant of their words, and pulls them into a narrative form that's easy to read.
Stephen, what is your background? Are you a lawyer? Are you a history teacher, or what?
Actually, my background was in leadership and nonprofits. So I was working in leadership roles in nonprofits. I retired from that. I was doing consulting in that space when this got a hold of me. And it started off as a passion project. I'm going to do it on the side. Certainly, I've always been a lover of history and read a lot about it. And started doing this, as I mentioned, kind of on the side as a project to how can I help? What can I do to help make people more aware? I do have a background in training, and in the training world, the whole goal is to take complicated concepts and to bring them into kind of a simple narrative form that you can help people digest in bite-sized chunks. And that's, so with that background, helps a great deal in telling the story and creating this in a way that people could really get their arms around and in one book find the words of the founding fathers presented in a way that is moving, I hope, for people and certainly is for me and is kind of pushes us to wow, this is what the America they intended. How far have we drifted from that vision, and what do we need to do to return to it?
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Stephen Rabb, who is the author of The Founder's Speech to a Nation in Crisis, What the Founders Would Say to America Today. You can find out more about it at his website, thefoundersspeech.com. This is a compilation, 10 different categories of situations, concepts.
Yeah, topics, kind of topics, and some of them are core principles, like those of the rights of conscience and the right of speech and the right to property. Those are kind of core principles of our founding. And others are talking about it more of threats. So one of the chapters is on tyranny. And what did the founding fathers say about tyranny and the tyranny of government, the tyranny that they were facing and lived through? Sometimes we forget that that, you know, the tyranny that they face is very similar to the tyrannies that we see today. And it's because human nature is forever, and those authoritarians have been with us always. And so there's much we can learn about how the founders responded to it. And that's much of the book, is how did they respond to, what did they say about property rights in the first place? And then as property rights were threatened for them, what did they do? How did they stand up to that? What was their voice behind that in for a people? And that's why, to me, the book is relevant, is because it's not just a, oh, isn't that interesting that they said these things, but that these are words of wisdom for us right now. These are things that we need to know, because we're under some of those very same threats in a different form, but the same threats, and need to be able to stand up. And you could look at how did we stand up in Boston when there was so much kind of thumb down, crackdown on patriots in Boston at that time. And the way they stood up was boycotts. They created both the Sons of Liberty and the Daughters of Liberty created boycotts of the products, including the Tea Party that we all know about, but well beyond that, boycotting English products, British products. And that became a tactic and strategy that they coordinated on, they communicated about, they required of each other, and that's how they won the day and turned things like the Stamp Act was revoked in a year because of boycotts. And that gives an idea of, well, how that's okay. Boycott is a strategy we can employ today whenever our rights are taken away, whenever a company is coming after us. Then these are the tactics we need to be reminded of and coordinate together, communicate together, and to stand up to the corporate and government tyrannies that are collaborating to take away our rights.
One of the things that reading your book reminded me is that, for example, in the chapter called Conscience, we have Edmund Burke saying, "For freedom without virtue is not freedom, but license to pursue whatever passions prevail in the intemperate mind," which you follow by Benjamin Franklin's quote, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom." This whole concept of we need government because we're not virtuous, but because people are prone to tyranny, because people are prone to taking things that belong to others and claiming them for themselves, we need a government. But on the other hand, we also have to have the balance there that for the first time in the world, power did not flow from the top down, but came from the bottom up. The people are the power, not the people we elect. The people we hire to be presidents and senators and Congress members and judges are our employees. And when we don't like what they're doing or saying, we fire them. And people forget that. People think that presidents are like kings or like emperors, and whatever they wave their hand and say, we're supposed to go along with. That's not what the Founding Fathers had in mind at all, is it?
Well, that's absolutely right. The first part of what you stated, completely agree. That was a core message of the Founding Fathers, that if we are not a people of virtue, we will not enjoy our liberty for long. We will, as one said, if you will not be ruled by the Ten Commandments, you will be ruled by the 10,000 Commandments. And the 10,000 Commandments will be that of our government, who will micromanage your every part of your world. And that's, if we're going to live in licentiousness, as they would put it, we will be requiring of ourselves as a people a government that manages all of our affairs. And that's not what a free people want. So for those of us who care deeply about liberty, we should also care deeply about faith and virtue, and the virtue of the people. And as Washington says, you cannot have virtue and morality without faith. That faith is the engine, is the underlying driver of a virtuous people. And so, and that's in the book and in that same chapter as well. So, yes, I mean, they saw the threats, and that the threats were external, but just as much internal in our nature, in the nature of humanity. And I think that, you know, you talk about the power of the people, and that people have the power, and that is so true. And that is, we also have an understanding. We have an understanding of our human nature. And that we, if you believe in original sin as I do, that we know then that all of us are capable of very poor behavior. We are moderated by faith to become the best version of ourselves, the better angels of our nature, and that's what keeps us in line. And because we understand that all are weak and capable of bad actions, we know we need to be in social contract with each other and have a government that is focused on protecting our liberties from those who would take away our liberties out of the worst nature of their selves. So that's the balance, is that on one hand, we pursue our faith and virtue. On the other hand, we know that people are fallible, and so we must have some form of government that is there with the intent, central purpose of protecting the liberties of the people.
The chapter Conscience ends with a fairly famous quote from Alexis de Tocqueville, a French diplomat who traveled to America in the early part of the 19th century. And I love this. "I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her harbors and her ample rivers, and it was not there. In her fertile fields and boundless prairies, and it was not there. In her rich mines and her vast world commerce, and it was not there. Not until I went to the churches of America and heard her pulpits aflame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because she is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great." That is a chilling reminder that we cannot assume that just because this great experiment of democracy that began almost 250 years ago is still going on, that does not mean that it will go on forever without due care and without due diligence. The chapter on speech is so good that it has inspired me to add to the syllabus of two different that are senior classes a section on what the Constitution has to say, in particular the First Amendment, about freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And the significance thereof, I really think that this is one of those chapters I thought, man, if we could just read this aloud, read the whole chapter, attribute those that are saying it with what's being said, it would be such a mind-blowing eye-opener for so many people who seem to be more concerned about being considered righteous than actually being righteous. The woke crowd that looks at trying to make themselves look so concerned about others, but not really being concerned, just wanting to look that way. This chapter alone, to me, is practically worth the price of the book, but I also did a lot of marking in property because that's something that was a big deal in those days, and we have had free ownership of property so long that we just sort of take it for granted now, and that is definitely to our detriment as well. Of all the chapters that you assembled, which one do you feel like becomes the most essential?
Wow, that's like asking me which of my kids do I love the most.
Yeah, right? Sorry, I know that's an unfair question.
That's tough. I mean, you know, they're all kind of themed on different topics. They all have kind of a place that hit for. The chapter on the Constitution, I hear a lot from a lot of people that is their favorite, simply because it does frame out the rationale in the words of the founders as to why they framed the Constitution the way they did, the limitation of powers in the federal government, the elevation and magnification of the state government roles, and the balancing of powers, and the why behind all of that. And I think so that's certainly one of my, I do love the chapter on property, and I do love the chapter on law. I think in many ways, one of the challenges we face today is a challenge to the rule of law. And we're seeing it play out in real time around us. And if you say what is the difference between America and other countries who have just as many potential resources and as many people and so on, and yet don't have the economy, then one of those reasons, not the only, but one of those reasons would be the rule of law. Our commitment to the rule of law, which is really born of the people. I mean, it's, you know, many nations have laws on the books, but do not execute those laws, do not have courts that enforce those laws, do not have law enforcement that can honestly and trustworthy way enforce those laws in the communities. So there's that the trust is low between everyone, and so therefore the rule of law is compromised. And so businesses can't operate well, and entrepreneurs can't innovate and people can't become their best and highest full potential because they're not operating in a world in which there is the rule of law. And that chapter is becoming more and more relevant in my mind because we see around us such a disrespect for the rule of law and the politicization of it in such a way that people lose trust. And that in itself is the danger, is that when we cannot trust the authorities that they are actually fulfilling their oath, then at that point, we really are in a slippery slope ourselves as a country. So when I talk about which chapters, I think there's chapters that I love the most, and there's chapters at any given moment in which I feel like that chapter has just become that much more relevant because of what we're all living through right now.
There are a couple of quotes in the Constitution chapter that I found particularly interesting. This is Frederick Douglass. "For the constitutional framers were peace men, but they preferred revolution to peaceful submission to bondage. They were quiet men, but they did not shrink from agitating against oppression. They believed in order, but not in the order of tyranny. With them, nothing was settled that was not right. With them, justice, liberty, and humanity were final, not slavery and oppression." And then I skip over to the other page, where he continues, "The Constitution contains principles and purposes entirely hostile to the very existence of slavery." Followed by John Quincy Adams, who said, "The Founding Fathers in the Constitution and Declaration of Independence destined slavery to be banished from the earth." So this certainly refutes the idea that the Constitution was a document to protect slavery or to maintain slavery. This was one of the most difficult decisions that they had to make during the Declaration of Independence and that they had to make in the Constitution. And the compromises were made, but the intent was always that slavery would die out because it would be an economically invalid system. Up until the invention of the cotton gin, it was doing so across the country.
Well, you're right. You're right about that. The cotton gin really extended the length of slavery in our country. There's no doubt about that. And I think one of the things that the founders were in that compromise or that position, that challenge of, on one hand, they have empires across the world that would be happy to sectionalize America and divide us up and let us all become satellite nations of their empires. And that was a great threat, and they discussed that in the Constitution. The other was if they attempted, so they were very concerned about not uniting and what that might mean to our national security. Then on the other side of that is the desire to eradicate slavery or begin the process of eradicating slavery aggressively, which was a big part of the debate and probably the most vociferous part of the debate during the Constitution. And that was Southern states being unwilling to budge on that. And the only choice then was, we will not be one nation. The 13 colonies will not come together and become a country. We will become either 13 colonies or two nations, one in the South that is a slave nation and one in the North that is a free nation. And so their choices were pretty ugly choices. And if they had chosen the slave nation of the South and the free nation of the North, then it would be hard to see how slavery ever would have ended at that point, because there would have been nothing within the South that would have pushed it to end that once it had essentially an entire nation that is built on slavery, and that's what they did was compromises, painful compromises that ended it slower rather than quickly, but that got both done. Protected our national security, our security as a nation, and ultimately ended slavery. And that's what they did in forming that Constitution, became the model for the world. The rest of the world modeled their constitutions after the American Constitution for a reason. And that's because it was the best at balancing, at creating the framework for limiting the tyrannical nature of human beings and protecting the liberties of the people.
At the end of the book, in the chapter titled Call, we get this reminder from Thomas Paine: "What you have attained too cheaply, you have esteemed too lightly." To which John Adams replies, "And you will never know how much it cost the present generation to preserve your freedom." And Thomas Jefferson, "To those who abandon freedom to achieve security, you will lose both and deserve neither." A reminder that freedom has never been free, and that there were those that came before us that paid the price. And we don't have to be in the military to be able to say that there is a price to be paid in preserving liberty, because cancel culture and all the other social media attacks that are out there against anybody who dares to say that to believe in God is to seek for wisdom and so forth. Mm-hmm. These are great words from great men from across the political spectrum over the better part of 85 years. I think it's really amazing how you put all these things together and created a narrative from them. And I can, like you say in the introduction, I can just imagine a hall filled with these great men saying these words and building upon each other's comments to add their own insight, all of which was gained through difficult measures. It's quite an extraordinary book, Steve.
Well, thank you, David, and I'm very happy that it's been so well received, and people have enjoyed it. It's been a lot to people, and that's of course, you know, that, as an author, that's what you want, that's what you love. I will tell you that we've just recently released also a student edition of the book, which gives 600 plus sources and notes that goes with each of the quotes. So when you are in a student setting. That you can then dig deep and go and see, well, which letter was this from? Well, which speech was this from? Where? What was the context of when they said this part of it? And really, and that's one of my hopes for the book, is that it makes people that much more interested in our founding, that they see it as more accessible, and that they see, and that the footnotes can become a stepping stone into their own research, the bibliography, to see what, let me go back and read these autobiographies of, or these biographies of, and these stories about the founders. Because it's, once you start, it's really amazing and uplifting, and you are astounded that these individuals came together at a time in history with such unique and amazing abilities that each had a part to play. The indispensable one was certainly George Washington. He was the leader, and if nothing else, read more about the father of our nation, George Washington, because it's just an astounding life and an incredible human being that I talk a lot about historical mentors, and that we all should pick historical mentors to help model our lives after, from Jesus to George Washington to others, to help us understand what a great life looks like and how to lead it. And certainly, yes, George Washington is on that list. So, yes, I appreciate your comments about the book, and it is available at Amazon. It's available on all the online booksellers, and as you mentioned, at thefounderspeech.com.
Stephen, thank you very much for joining us today to talk about this extraordinary book, and glad to hear about the student edition. I'm looking forward to finding a copy of that as well. Thank you so much for joining us, and may I be the first to wish you a most blessed and joyful Independence Day.
Amen to that. I appreciate that. And yeah, I look forward to talking with you again, Dave. This has been a great conversation.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Our thanks again to author and editor Stephen Rabb of The Founder's Speech to a Nation in Crisis, What the Founders Would Say to America Today. You can learn more at thefounderspeech.com. And as Stephen was saying, they're coming out with a student book. There'll be a student guide. It sounds very exciting. I think this will be a tremendous thing to use in a civics class, but also in any class on American history. I think there are great possibilities for it. So thanks so much for joining us as we prepare our nation for Independence Day on July the 4th. We thought we'd celebrate a little early here, and we hope that you enjoyed this time together and that you will reflect on it and reflect on our nation and pray for our nation. I'm not doing this in a partisan way, but just say pray for our nation, pray for our leaders. That's what the Bible tells us we should be doing, and we need to do that. And we need to celebrate America and celebrate the great sacrifices of people that came before us. They give us this incredible experiment that had never been seen successfully on the face of the earth, that we found to be successful so far in the United States of America. Until next time, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless America.